from the high desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world's time zones, each and every one covered by this program, Midnight in the Desert. I'm Art Bell. It's good to be here, and we're going to have a fun show tonight. Reflecting very quickly on last night's program, yes, I know, it was hard, harsh, scary, unfortunately realistic. And that's what we do every now and then. I think people have forgotten how I do programs over the years. They have selective memories, and I will bounce back and forth between everything. The scary, and then there's the other kind of scary. We have ghosts, right? That's good scary. Nuclear weapons, bad scary. I understand, trust me. But I have always done that. I have always bounced back and forth. And people, I don't know, I think they tend to forget that over the years. I mix it up a lot. Like tonight, for example. We're going to mix it up. No bad language. I have two rules. That's one. And the other is only one call per show. I've got people to thank. Telos, Joe Talbot, thank you. Keith Rowland, my webmaster. Heather Wade, my producer. And I want to remind you, if you've got a good idea for a guest, and I mean a really good idea, get with Heather. And the way you do that is producer@artbell.com. Could not be easier. producer@artbell.com. She loves ideas. Stream guys, lv.net, sales, Pete Eberhardt. TuneIn Radio, of course, Leo Ashcraft, Dark Matter News, and a lot more, really. He does a whale of a job. So, all those people, thank you. Let's read just a little bit of news. We're going to talk about OBEs tonight. You know, there's no question about it. I know you guys love that topic, as do I. We did it all that not that long ago with President Bennett, but the real guy for OBEs, the original guy, is Dr. Albert Taylor. He's going to be with us this night. Well, Russia launched airstrikes Wednesday in Syria. They were supposed to hit ISIS, but instead they, take this in quotes, mistakenly hit enemies of the regime there, did a lot of damage, too. So we kind of had a meeting with them in the middle of the day and said, come on, let's coordinate military activity here and do what needs to be done. And they sort of said, duh. So we'll see. It's not good, though. The Taliban is gaining new ground. I don't have any good news, do I? Taliban is gaining new ground in Afghanistan. They have taken another key town. It's just not good news at all. So there are recommendations that American boots on the ground be extended for more time. This is from theanomalous.com. The world is full of anomalies and curiosities that defy explanation. But ultimately, one of the biggest mysteries resides within our own human brains. It's mostly an unexplored frontier that science only has begun to understand, and this recent research on what's called blind sight is a perfect example of one of those inexplicable mysteries. How are people able to still perceive the world around them when they've got either partial or total blindness? But the fact is, they can. Now, as if you needed any more convincing about aliens, it seems there is a top-secret FBI memo released by the Haiku Center for UFO Research in Tokyo, Japan, and they claim they've discovered a document that proves there is extraterrestrial life. The FBI memo contains details about flying saucers, multiple, being piloted by 3 feet tall aliens, 3 foot tall aliens. Bureau is said to be concerned about the findings at the research center. I imagine they are. fearing the discovery could lead to members of the public gaining access to thousands of documents. God knows where it might go. The FBI memo reportedly reads, an investigator for the Air Force states that three so-called flying saucers have been discovered in New Mexico, described as being circular in shape, raised centers about 50 feet tall, or 50 feet rather in diameter, I'm sorry, each one occupied by three bodies of human shape, but only 3 feet tall, dressed in metallic cloth of a very fine texture. According to Mr. Redacted, of course, right, the saucers were found in New Mexico due to the fact that the government has highly powered radar set up in the area, and it's believed the radar interferes with the controlling mechanism of the saucers. Isn't that interesting? They actually came to a conclusion, apparently, according to this, about what brought the saucers down. Radar radiation. Well, I'd have two comments on that. Number one, the fact that this is included would indicate to me that after Marcel found what he found, it wasn't just all dismissed at all as a balloon or what have you, but they actually did enough of an investigation, if this is true, to have come to a conclusion, false though it may have been, that our radar brought them down. That sort of adds an extra ounce of credibility to the whole story, in my opinion. Well, all right, coming up, Dr. Albert Taylor. He is a number one Los Angeles Times best-selling author and former, this is going to get you, aeronautical engineer and scientist on the International Space Station. That's right. Dr. Taylor spent 2.5 decades evaluating systems designs on a wide variety of top-secret government programs like the F-117A stealth fighter, the Strategic Defense Initiative Anti-Ballistic Missile Program, and otherwise known as Star Wars. He was born and raised in Southern California, so he's a California boy, currently a paranormal researcher, international lecturer and speaker, working on the latest book, which he calls Journey of the Cosmic Soul, a detailed scientific and spiritual study resulting from over 20 years of out-of-body paranormal and astrophysical research. Beyond that, he is a robotics expert, designing and building fully semi-autonomous robotic probes to support his ongoing research of various types of paranormal phenomena. So, there you have it. That's an amazing, amazing background for somebody who's going to talk about what he's going to talk about. I think it's absolutely incredible. The way some electronics operates is incredible, too. Anyway, Dr. Albert Taylor, about to talk with you about OBEs.
Take a ride. Your conductor, Art Bell, will punch your ticket when you call 1-952-CALL-ART. That's 1-952-225-5278.
That's a number, all right, but hold your calls, because here comes Dr. Albert Taylor. Doctor, welcome to Midnight in the Desert.
All right, thank you for the wonderful introduction, and it's a pleasure to be with you.
It has been how long?
Almost 19 years, I think, that we've been talking since 1996.
I would say that'd be about right, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I found out recently, having done a show with Preston Bennett, that this audience, this particular audience, is really wild, as am I might add, about OBEs. It's the one thing that you can do within yourself that doesn't require expensive airline tickets. It doesn't require special passes or anything else. You can just do it. You can go out of your own body And I guess you can go anywhere in the world and beyond.
Well, I'm pretty excited about it, too. So you can include me in that.
But how you got to that stuff before, I mean, after the International Space Station and Star Wars and the F-117 and all that cool stuff, do you still possess classified stuff?
No, I don't. No, that would be probably against the law. So, no, I do have some.
I meant classified knowledge.
Oh, yeah. There's some things that I can't talk about.
Okay, let's talk about those.
I don't know when that's going to expire.
Sure. It's expired. Let's talk about that. No.
Why not? Let's talk about it. I'll share what I can.
Anybody who works.
America is awesome. Our technology is unbelievable. It's projected out. Some of the things we work on today are 40 to 50 years in the future for any other nation developing similar tech. So we have a lot of really cool stuff.
We do, and we've got a lot of scary stuff, too.
Yes, we do.
I did a show on that last night. I don't know if you happened to hear that. If you did, I'm surprised you're feeling well today. Really scary. All right, so I sort of read your background in the government, but if you want to go into detail about what you did, just short of classified, you're welcome to do so. I mean, the International Space Station, that's interesting anyway. What did you do?
Basically, I was responsible for the pressurized mating adapter that the shuttle used to dock to, and the crew would transfer from the shuttle to a one of the nodes, which is a command and control node. I was also responsible for the design and components in the command and control node. I was also responsible for the cupola, which is like one of the coolest things on the space station, which is the windows in that like octagonal pattern that you can, the
right.
Astronauts look out and they look at the Earth.
Yes.
And also I was responsible for the airlock, which the astronauts don their EV, their spacesuits, and they exit to foreign maintenance and research on the space station.
That is such exciting stuff. My God.
Extremely exciting.
Extremely. So I want to ask you this. How disappointed are you that the U.S. space program seems, what's the right word, stagnant, moving backward, not progressing? I mean, we should be on our way. We should have been Mars, in my opinion, already.
Well, if you remember when 2001, A Space Odyssey came out.
Of course.
We were thinking in 2001 we would have all those things. We didn't even come close. We're not even close to that now. We've made some mistakes. We've invested in... I love the shuttle, but we should not have invested in just the shuttle. We should have had more than one heavy lift vehicle during that process that we were developing at the same time. That way, we wouldn't be developing it now. The SLS is a heavy lift vehicle, but we would have had it a long time ago. It probably would have made it easier to build the space station also in its original configuration, which would have been able to build interplanetary vehicles in space in a mm-hmm. big shed that we designed. So I'm tremendously disappointed. I think we're going to pick up speed and get going once Orion starts flying and all the other vehicles that some of the civilian stuff is doing and with people like Buzz Aldrin, which is, you know, really pushing the Mars thing, which I think is so awesome. And the latest discovery of
water,
that is a huge incentive for us to go there. So I think we're going to make up for lost time, but, yeah, it has been a huge disappointment.
Actually, I am even more disappointed than that. I thought that by now we would be working on warp-type drives. And there are some out there trying to work on them, but, I mean, to use the kind of rockets we've been using to get into low Earth orbit or to geosync or even to the moon is never really going to get us very far. Maybe it'll get us to Mars and back if those who go are lucky.
If you remember when we were when Neil Armstrong and on Apollo 12 and 14 and
of course.
We're landing on the moon.
Yes.
Do you remember that during, I think it was 14, hardly anybody was watching it on, and even the major news carriers weren't carrying the actual walk.
I know. So everybody got bored.
All of this is, yeah, what drives all of this is enthusiasm. And sometimes our enthusiasm wanes when it becomes, you know, repetitive, like the shuttle launches. Mm-hmm. After a while, people weren't watching until something happened, and then everybody was watching those first two launches, and then we went back to forgetting about it.
I know.
So that's why, if we could maintain that enthusiasm, I think we could progress a lot faster than we have been.
Well, if we could be on our way to Alpha Centauri much faster than the speed of light, I would get really, really excited. That's kind of where I had sort of hoped we'd be, but we're not. There are people on the plus side. There are people, Dr. Taylor, beginning to work on warp drives, that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, I've seen some articles and videos on things that they're working on, and even different concepts on types of engines. And I think we're going to be able to do all of that, you know. And it's just going to take a time, and we're going to have to be patient. And you know what's really exciting, though, Art, is that civilian industries are getting involved. And that's what drove the aircraft designs that we have today.
Mm-hmm.
So once civilians get involved and start making it a profitable situation, because that's how our economy works, that's really what's going to drive the technology and the deeper exploration and the really exciting part of space travel.
In the meantime, we've probably got a better chance of doing an OBE and going to Mars than we do with NASA, at least for the time being.
It doesn't cost anything. It's
well, that's right. No tickets involved. And, you know, when you first told me about OBEs all those years ago, I went, oh, yeah, right.
Right.
This is really, it's foo-foo stuff. You know, I tend to stay away from real foo-foo stuff.
Right.
But the truth is, it works. Now, I'm not claiming that I have personally done it extensively. I've done it very quickly. I'm telling you the same story I did all those years ago, and I popped right back in, but I was out long enough to say, oh my God, I was out. So it does work. And then along come people like you, President Bennett, who tell me, not only can you go out of your body, but you can go anywhere you want. Preston says you can walk right through walls. Do you agree with that?
Oh, definitely. You can go anywhere you can focus your consciousness on. And that's a task in itself, because you have to stay focused. There's so much going on, and not everybody's going to be at that super conscious level to be able to do that. Some people are going to be in various lower levels, like dream states, semi-conscious states, semi-lucid states. So if you can focus your consciousness, and you can go there. Most people think that you can focus on the same things that you would experience that you want to do in everyday life, like you want to go to the Bahamas or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not how it works, because when you get into that other state, which almost is like a hypnotic superconscious state, you're only going to be able to focus on what's passionate to you.
Can we go back to walls for just a moment?
Okay.
Preston said something that I would like you to deal with, and I thought it was just kind of cool. He said that depending on what you're walking through, you can feel a little something as you go through. The more dense an object, it's not hard to walk through any wall, but the more dense an object, you feel a little something as you go through that density. Is that true?
Oh, I've been doing this for a while now, and you know, I've heard a lot of people share their experiences, and I can always tell when someone really knows what it feels like by details that you don't hear about, and that's one of them. I've talked about it periodically, but I don't talk about it that much.
You never talk about that with me. It's like the cops that hold back important information so they know when they really got their guy.
The thing about the second body, or as Robert Monroe called it, or the astral body, is that it's super sensitive. I mean, far more sensitive than what the information you'd get from your five senses or touching something. Huh. So when you feel a fiber or even pass through a surface, you feel almost every molecule that's in that surface. And it's so incredibly, you can almost get, that's what I was saying, if you can focus on a place, you can go there, but it's so hard to focus on a distant place or a location because of the experience in the present that you're going through. Just feeling that sensation, you can get lost doing that. I remember in the beginning, I would just lay there moving my legs, my astral legs, up and then back down through the bed and touching the carpet and then moving up, and I would just keep doing that. I wasn't even thinking of flying or going anywhere, but that's how amazing the whole experience is.
All right. Well, understand. Some in my audience right now are going, oh, come on. Others who have done this are going, yeah, I completely understand. And I have now spoken to so many people with so many details that I know that what you guys are saying is true. I want to be able to do it myself. And just as all those years ago, Dr. Taylor, I can get to the edge. I can get to the buzz. I can get to even the partial paralysis, but then I freak out and cop out and come back, and I just can't release control.
And that's something that only you can overcome, unfortunately. I wish I could. I can get you to the doorstep and tell you all the techniques. But the thing about it, stepping through is, and that's a hard thing. I'm not going to say it's easy at all, because there's a fear of the unknown. Nature has inbred that, I mean, instilled that upon us to survive. So fear of the unknown is a huge factor.
Well, of course it is.
Is a huge factor. All the scary things we hear about that. Religious beliefs is a huge factor. So all those things our senses are heightened. So if you're going to go through a fearful emotion, it's going to almost feel like tenfold.
Okay.
And it's going to be so intense, you're going to think it's real.
All right.
So
well, here's a question for you. You're able to walk through solid objects.
Mm-hmm.
You're also, I take it, able to walk through a person.
I haven't tried that one yet.
Really?
But I would think you could, any material surface.
Okay.
Living or dead.
That's right. We're just a bunch of water sacks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So presumably in that state, you could walk through a person. And if you did, as with other solid things, if you feel a little something when you move through it, I wonder if a living being would feel moved through.
It would, I haven't done that. And I'm going to put it on my bucket list, though, for sure, because I don't see what happens. But I would think, because of the heightened sensations that you have, it might be a mind-melting kind of situation. I think definitely you're going to pick up on some type of life force, like energy. You're going to definitely be in touch with the astral energy.
Uh-huh.
So I think that there will be something, and because I've heard of people having near-death experiences at the same time,
in
car accidents, and they were able to feel each other's emotions and even communicate, I think doing that, you probably would be able to sense a lot of things. It just may not be two-way.
Well, I'm glad that you brought up NDEs, because I have talked to any number of people who have been actually either on top of or hugging a relative who died, Dr. Taylor, and they said they felt that person's soul pass through them.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. I think, like I said a long time ago, and a friend of mine used to say, we are the ghosts that we think we see and things like that. We are them. So if we're the same thing, and in out-of-body experiences that I've had, you share a lot of emotion, and not just thought energy, but you share a lot of emotion. For someone to transition from a living body and pass through a living person, I would imagine that that's going to be a very spiritual experience. Probably not only losing a loved one, but the actual sensation is going to be life-changing.
Well, if you lost a loved one and felt that, you would interpret it instantly. But if you were just in everyday life and somebody passed through you in an OBE state, you might just sort of go, oh, that was a weird feeling, or something akin to that. In other words, there'd be no bump. There would be, though, a sensation of, I don't know, a sensation. I'll try to find words for it. Dr. Taylor, hold on. We've got news, a couple spots, and then lots of open territory for discussion of OBEs. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell.
But it is what's next, exclusively on the Dark Matter Digital Network, Midnight in the Desert, with Art Bell. Now, here's Art.
Here I am. Dr. Albert Taylor is here, and I just want to emphasize one more time. You know, if you know somebody who is really in pain, or if you're really in pain, I've had this bad back all my adult life. The only thing that has ever helped me, seriously helped me, has been this Lumen business, and it, I'm telling you, it works from me. And after you, you know what? If somebody out there gets one of these things, and I'm sure you will, for me it's back pain. It works on all kinds of things. But if somebody out there gets one of these things and wants to publicly discuss it here on the air, I'd be up for that. A miracle for me. Now, just before, I want to try and put words to it. We were talking about a person in an OBE state walking through a solid body of another person. And I think I've felt that happen. I could swear I have. It's like, I said I had to put words to it. It's kind of like somebody is suddenly in the room, or somebody is suddenly watching you. We have talked other times about, you know, for animals, for example, they know just before a hunter is going to let go of an arrow toward them. They know just before they're going to squeeze the trigger, they start, and then, of course, startle, and then it's too late. They're probably dead. But is that kind of feeling, like something's there, something's with me, just a little shiver? That's what I'm talking about, Albert.
It could, you know, because of there's some paranormal things going on there, ions, involving ions, so you could feel a sense of a chill, a sense
yeah.
of being cold.
Right.
You could feel a sense of being warm also, emotional, extremely emotional, like happy, sad kind of emotion,
mm-hmm.
not just sad because of the person departing. So, and you know, you got to think about this. We are basically energy with a lot of different organic and material. The person dying is energy with a lot of organic material, but when the body dies, that energy stays, it doesn't die. You can only transform energy. So if that energy passes through your energy field, it makes sense that there is going to be some type of interaction
yes.
and some type of flux in your energy field. And because we sense energy emotionally, it's going to tap into that emotion that, you know, is affected by that kind of emotional or supercharged energy.
All right. A lot of people in our audience tonight, Dr. Taylor, don't believe this. They don't believe that you can actually travel out of your body. Another segment of our audience knows you
totally
can
understand.
Because they have done so.
Yeah,
so
totally
if you were asked for proof that it's possible to leave your body, is it suppliable?
And this is what's awesome about it, is because I totally understand the skepticism. I was skeptical. I didn't think this was even close to possible. I grew up a Catholic, and you didn't talk about that stuff. Even though I was having strange things happen to me, there's no way I thought that I was having an out-of-body experience. But I think, personally, you can talk to me and share with me all until the cows come home about this, but if I don't have a personal experience, it really doesn't matter a whole lot.
Right.
So what's so really awesome about out-of-body experiences is that there's a certain mechanics to it, even though there's a certain spiritual and meditative state to it. But there's a certain mechanics to it that if you do these certain things, it increases your chances of having one. And I suggest to anybody, it be skeptical, but be open.
Okay, we'll get to this. But what I asked was, if I asked you to prove OBEs are real, would you have any way to do that?
I think the personal experience proves it more than anything. I can't say, you mean like I'll go to this room, like a remote viewing kind of situation, where I'll go to this room and see what's there and come back and report it to you?
Something like that.
I think some people probably maybe can do that. I haven't been able to do that because it's very difficult for me to focus on very, very basic things like visiting Disneyland, and because there's so much, the more I've done it over the years, the more it's become a spiritual, incredible, supercharged, you have experiences with the light and death, deceased loved ones, and all the physical things that I thought I wanted to do pale in comparison. So I think that's difficult to do that. And I welcome if anybody out there, because there's a lot of astral travelers out there who have skills maybe beyond mine ever could be. I would say it's definitely possible. It doesn't seem to fit into my experiences.
Okay, well, something like this, for example. Let's say that you journey out of body and you go to Uncle Phil's in Northern California, and you observe mm-hmm. something in Uncle Phil's room that's different or surprising or shocking. And you get back in your body, and you pick up the phone and call Uncle Phil and verify whether or not what you just saw is the truth.
Well, I can share this experience that I have had. And I've had two interesting ones that led me to think that it's more than just a dream or something like that.
All right.
I had a friend of mine at work who I felt comfortable talking about this. And she said to come visit her. And I thought, okay. So through the process of relaxing and flying, because that's what you do in the out-of-body experience, mm-hmm. and arriving at this location, only thing I could do was start, looking around and trying to remember, because it's very difficult to remember things, remember what I was seeing. So I saw a chandelier that was larger than it should have been at her particular dining room. I saw a hallway with three doors. I saw a window with an odd window in the corner of the room with a telephone pole blocking half of it. And out that, I saw an alleyway. So when I came back to my physical body, I wrote all of this down, and we were working at the space station at the time. And I went upstairs. I know, talking about the space station.
What you really don't want to do, actually, is walk into your boss's room, at NASA and say, guess what I just did?
Yeah, I know. That was something that was really, we whispered. It was almost.
You would be shuttled out of there so quickly.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't have been very good for getting a raise or anything like that. But anyway, I shared it with her, and what I saw matched her apartment. So I was, that didn't matter to me. I was still extremely skeptical. But this was what really was interesting, is I had an experience with this woman who had a near-death experience. And she was the first person that ever told me, you're probably having out-of-body experiences. And I was really skeptical when she said that. But she said, come visit me. And so that night, because I was developing some techniques on how to get out, I was getting about, 50% to 60% success in what I was doing, is I traveled to her house. I found myself traveling. And that's what's interesting, is you think you're flying alone, but you're really not. You have company. And so I thought I was flying alone, but I wasn't. And I arrived at this location I'd never been. I came, and I thought I was going to crash into the roof. I went through the ceiling. I could see the insulation. I could see plumbing, electrical wire. And then I found myself at the foot of the bed of somebody in the bed. And I'm looking at them, and I see it's the person that I wanted to see, the doctor who had a near-death experience. And I looked around the room, and the first thing I noticed was that I thought she had a cast on her leg, and her leg was broken.
Yes.
And I thought, okay, I don't remember her leg being broken at class, so that's something interesting to remember. And another thing I remember is seeing twin beds, and her husband or somebody was, I knew she was married, sleeping on the other side of the room and another bed. I guess they'd been married for a long time, but that might be besides the point.
Right.
I thought, okay, that's good to remember too. So when I returned back and wrote all this down, I couldn't wait to go see her. She was teaching a college course at the local college out here, and I went up to her and I said, something really incredible happened. I had an incredible dream. And she said to me, you know, on Saturday, because this is the same day it happened, I had the experience, on Saturday, I had a dream that you were standing at the foot of my bed.
Uh-huh.
I thought, okay. And I looked at her leg. Her leg looked fine. It didn't look broken. I thought, well, in the dream sequence I had, you had a broken leg, and you had something, a white cast on your leg. And she said, no. She said, but I do sleep with a heating pad on my leg because I have arthritis in my knee.
Huh.
And I thought, oh, well, that's interesting. And then I said, you know, I know you're married, but in my dream situation, I said, your husband was sleeping way on the other side of the room. And she said, yeah, he sleeps way on the other side of the room because he has sleep apnea and he wakes me up at night.
Oh.
So I went home. I mean, I went home shocked at this. And I was thinking, could this be real? Could we really be is it possible for a part of us to actually leave the physical body? And does that mean that we have a soul or a spirit of some sort? And I could not go to sleep all night long thinking about
this. So are you telling me this was at the very beginning of your astral travel?
Yes. This was.
Wow.
I didn't even know what it was exactly, except
okay.
for the doctor sharing with me, you probably are having out-of-body experiences. That was the first I'd read in when I was a kid about near-death experiences.
Wait. A doctor shared with you that in other words, you went to a physician.
Oh, no. Let me back up.
Okay.
She was teaching a class at the college, and because she had a near-death experience, she was teaching a class on that kind of thing.
Okay.
So I went to the class. Because I was looking for answers on what was happening to me, because it went from happening once every couple weeks to happening several times a week, three times a week, and then sometimes three times a night. So it got my attention.
Oh, yeah, so that'd get my attention too.
Yeah. And this was happening at night, and then I'd have to go and literally fly to Houston Space Center and help train the astronauts on how to assemble the space station in the giant pool there.
Hmm.
So. It was, let's say, distracting and stressful. So I went to her and to the class, and during the class, she was the first person outside of my family that ever said, has anybody ever felt paralyzed that night? And my hand shot up because I'd never heard anybody talk about that except for my family. And I said, yeah, it happens to me all the time. And she immediately replied, and she was the first person I ever said, she said, you may be having out-of-body experiences.
Were you worried for your mental stability?
Oh, definitely.
Right.
As a matter of fact, that's the first thing I did is I went to see a psychiatrist to be evaluated.
Really? I'm curious.
Yeah.
What did the psychiatrist say?
Well, I went because I was, like I said, I didn't know about this stuff. So I was thinking, because it was happening to several people in my family, that it was neurological or maybe a psychosis of some sort. So I went to the doctor, and I explained to him some of the things, not in detail. I wanted to leave and go home, too. But I explained to him some of the details of the things that were happening, and they put me through an incredible amount of testing. MRIs, neurological, ink blot, all
really,
kinds of things.
Really.
And he gave me a flying colors. I mean, a great evaluation. So, but that was, I was disappointed.
Did he give you a, conclusion, doctor?
He said that it doesn't seem to have any problem. I'm rational. I'm logical. My job doesn't seem to be affected by anything that would be indication, interaction with people, on and on, all these criteria that I didn't know that whole lot about. But basically he said, you're fine. But I was disappointed, Art, because I wanted him to find something.
I get it.
I wanted him to find a physical thing so I could say, oh, that's it. What do I do about it? Take a pill, therapy, whatever. But when he said I was okay, I knew that, okay, that means I'm on my own. I've got to go back to the situation that's happening several times a night and deal with it.
Right.
And because I'm a researcher, I thought, okay, I'm going to go back and I'm going to document my descent into insanity. And that's how my book...
It honestly sounds like a train of thought that I can understand for somebody who's in the hard sciences and is trying to figure out what the hell's going on in their own mind.
Right.
It's a logical...
I was going to go crazy. I was losing it. Alzheimer's, whatever the problem. And I was when they found me babbling and drooling in the corner...
Yes.
My manuscript would be laying there, and they could figure out how I got there. That's what I was doing.
All right. So you qualify easily as an expert on OBEs. Let's do this. Let's do how to increase the possibility of your having an OBE. What would your list of suggestions be, please?
Okay, first of all, it happens to almost everybody every night. We just don't remember. So one of the techniques is to remember it's happening. Okay, that's one of the things. We sleep, depending on how tired you are, we sleep very, very heavy in the beginning, and then we come up to a lighter REM state toward the morning, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, right before we wake up.
Well, I already want to stop you on number one. You said the first most important thing is to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How do we differentiate? How are we to know the difference between a very, very graphic dream, and some of them are, and an OBE?
Well, because dreams you forget about. Sometimes you don't even remember when you wake up. And even when you do remember them, they don't usually have any profound emotional impact on you. An out-of-body experience will have a profound impact on you. You will not think of it like a dream. It will last. You'll be thinking about it. You'll have questions. You may experience that intense fear that I was talking about, because you don't usually experience that in a dream, not this intense. So they will be so different that you will not forget about it.
Okay.
At all.
All right, that's number one. Then number two is, I'm sorry, number two.
Okay. One of the things that I discovered is that toward the early morning part, we remember our dreams more. We have lucid dreams. That's when I was having a lot of lucid dreams. That's when I would fly in my dreams and things like that. So what I did is I experimented on recreating it naturally.
In what way?
But what I did is I would go to bed about 10 o'clock at night. I'd set my alarm for about maybe 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
I'd get out of the bed and not just reach over and turn it off, because I noticed when I couldn't sleep sometimes and I wake up in the middle of the night and go back to bed, that's when I would have the experience. So I'd get out of the bed, stay up for about an hour, drink water, don't eat anything, just drink water, and then go back to bed and then lay it perfectly still. And this is really important. Lay perfectly still and relax every portion of your body from head to toe.
Okay.
What's going to happen here is have you ever been really, really tired and you were driving a car and for that brief second you nodded out, just a brief second, and startled.
Yes. And so, when you come back to consciousness, it is sheer terror.
Yeah, definitely. So what you've done in this, I call this the interrupted sleep technique. What you've done is recreated that situation, except now you're in a safe environment. So no matter how hard you try to stay awake, if you're laying perfectly still, you're going to reach that point where the body's going to nod off. It, like it would in the car or something. If you hold still, it's going to happen. Even if you don't, you're going to fall asleep. But the thing is because you've interrupted the sleep pattern and given your body, your consciousness, about 4 hours to rest and sleep, when your body drops off, you're going to be at that heightened awareness state. And you may even, when it happens, and this really shocked me because when it happened, that was the first time I'd ever gone from consciously laying there to into a paralysis state where I couldn't move my physical body.
Right.
I actually heard myself snoring, and I thought it was someone else snoring that was very close behind me, which almost scared me.
Oh, I've heard that a lot.
You actually hear your body snoring.
I've heard that a lot.
Sometimes people hear those sounds snoring, and it wakes them up. So that's the state you want to get to.
Yeah, I've been in that state any number of times. In the afternoon, I'll lay down on the couch. If it's boring, whatever I'm watching, I'll lay on my back with my hands behind my head, and I'll start to fall asleep. And I don't know how many minutes later, I hear myself snoring. It's embarrassing, actually.
Right. Well, you've
and
come to a fork in the road right there.
Really?
And because you've altered it with interrupting your sleep pattern, it increases your chances of going into a lucid state rather than just going into a deep sleep state.
All right, hold it right there. I love this subject. Go BE's. Dr. Albert Taylor is my guest. I'm Mark Bell, and this is Midnight in the Desert.
Midnight in the Desert doesn't screen calls. We trust you, but remember, the NSA, well, you know. To call the show, please dial 1-952-225-5278. That's 1-952-CALL-ART.
Love that one. Dr. Albert Taylor is my guest. We are discussing OBEs, and I hope some of you have dragged out a piece of paper and are paying attention, because he's telling us how to do it. First of all, most importantly, remember. Secondly, you might set the alarm. I know that this just doesn't sound intuitive, but for 2 in the morning, or 3 in the morning or something, when you wake up, drink something perhaps, but don't eat, and then get into this relaxed state. Do I have it about right?
That's it. And no matter if you try to stay awake, you will. Something's going to happen. You're either going to drift back off into a deep state, which I doubt because of the interrupted time period, and or you're going to hear yourself snoring or find yourself paralyzed, or you're going to hear this loud rushing wind. I mean, extremely loud.
Yes.
Or you're going to hear, because it's a vibrational energy thing, you're going to hear a very loud buzzing sound.
That would indicate the beginning of an OBE.
Definitely, definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. That it's like a road sign. Those are like road signs. The slower you go through the separation process,
yes,
the more you hear.
All
so
right.
The slower you go, if you go through fast, some of those things you may not experience at all, but that slow process, those are things that you're going to hear as you're invite, as you, your consciousness transitions from a physical state, which is your body, to a higher vibrational state, which is your astral form.
All
it
right.
vibrates at a little higher vibration, so you will hear and feel that vibration.
All right, doctor. All right. Let's say that I'm up to step number 4, and I've got the buzzing, and I feel kind of paralyzed, and I want to take the next step. In other words, I want out of my body. This is where I fail. This is where I get scared and I can't make it. What can I do at that juncture to jump, to go?
Well, there's 2 things you need to do. First is that you need to calm down, because it's exciting and the excitement can bring you back. You need to suspend any kind of ideas you have on what's going to happen. Just be an observer. Because if you think about something, you could scare yourself during that process.
Huh.
Yeah, it could happen very easily. And then once that happens, if you can't see already, because sometimes the vision, your vision just comes on, if you can't see, say to yourself, I want to see. And it's really, I know it sounds simple, but ask and you shall receive.
Okay.
If you haven't moved anywhere, say, I want to float upward. And that's what usually gets things moving. The difference is, and I've talked to people who've awakened in the state and knew nothing about out-of-body experiences, and one of the things that happens is they find themselves bouncing around the room, experiencing being totally out of control. Well, what's happening there is that you don't know you can control it. It's like jumping in a car and going down a hill and not grabbing the steering wheel. Every bump it hits, it's going to veer off and go in a direction. But know that you can control this by your desire and being able to focus on what you want to happen.
Okay. Now, let's move on. Let's say that the impossible happens and I make it out. Can I then choose a destination, and if so, how?
If it's a person, which is easier than a location, a physical location, if they have an emotional impact on you while you're in the waking state, you should be able to think of them very easily, a loved one, your mother, a dear friend, something like that. If you can think of them, all you have to say is, I want to visit or I want to be with, and something strange might happen. Is like I said, touched on earlier, you're not alone, so you may not be able to see them, perceive them, because we're not talking about light coming through the optic nerve and bouncing off the retina or anything. We're talking about a sensation. You may feel someone touch you or grab you and push and assist you in the direction that you want to go in.
Yeah, I don't know. I like that.
I recommend. Yeah, that's the way it is. But think of it more like a guardian angel. I mean, everybody accepts the fact that it's not going to harm you in any way, and that's basically what I'm talking about. You can call it anything you want, but it's the same thing. But I recommend for beginners, stay local. Do it. Get better at it. Stay in the room. Move around the room.
Okay.
Touch things.
All right.
Touch things. Put your hands through things. Move into a different part of the house. Look for, if you have children, go visit and look for the children.
Right.
What you will find is something really interesting. Like I mentioned with the doctor who had the heat pad around her leg, is that you can interact with them in a way depending on how consciously they are aware. They may not be that aware, or they may be, but you can. The more aware they are, the more you can interact with them. And it's really, really interesting. And like I said, that's why it's so hard to go beyond that, because you have to focus, is because there's so many incredible things you can do in the near vicinity of your body, your physical body.
Just think how you could have messed with her, turned her heating pad up to 120.
You know, if I could move physical objects in that state, that would be very interesting. I don't think that it may not be impossible in the future for someone, but that would be an awesome talent or capability.
It would be. Anyway, I'm just messing with you. I know you can't affect physical things.
You can only wish.
Right. There is never a case in that state where you can affect anything physical, right?
No, I haven't been able to, and I don't haven't heard or had any reports of anybody else being able to. But during the paranormal, of course, we have heard and seen video of non-physical consciousness moving objects. So let's say it's not impossible, but it doesn't seem to apply to an astral traveler or an out-of-body experiencer.
Well, when I interviewed Preston Bennett, I asked him what I asked you years ago, and I will ask again now. And that is, can anything go wrong? And is there anything dangerous about it? And his first reaction, like yours, was, oh, no, nothing can ever go wrong. And if it does, you snap right back into your body like a rubber band that's just been let go of. Right? That's the answer.
The worst thing that can happen is you scare yourself because you encounter something that's unknown. This is the thing that I discovered, and I've been afraid of things like this since I was a little tiny kid, since I was 5 years old. And I said this, remember I shared this with you before, going into the astral plane and not wanting to see ghosts is like going into the ocean and not wanting to see fish.
Huh.
That's where they are. So you projecting, or if you're scared of that or you have a fear about that, the worst thing that could possibly happen is that you will scare yourself. But not everybody who is on the other side is angelic. That doesn't mean you're going to meet, you know, these wonderful souls over there. People carry a lot of their traits and who they are when they're over there at the lower state of the astral.
So nasty on this side, nasty on that side.
Yeah, so you could have a negative experience with something or someone, but the thing is you always have I call it my ejection seat. You can always return to the physical, and they can't.
Okay. And then there's one more step I'll take, and that is this. Can you be absolutely sure? I mean, we know that, you've heard the old expression, dead men tell no tales, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they don't, as far as I know. How many people every year in the world die in their sleep? Answer, many, many, many.
Mm-hmm.
How can you be sure that some of those people, of the many, 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 didn't die when something went wrong when they were out of the body?
Okay, I don't think you can cause it to happen. I don't think you have that much power because there's a bigger story going on. There's a lot more that you are a part of and that you are important to, and part of that importance is your interaction and day-to-day life and how you affect people. So you can't interrupt that process just by doing something and remembering something that you normally do subconsciously anyway. So you don't have to worry about that. But the experience is the same. If a person is passing, the probability of them having similar disconnection experiences is going to be high like yours. Let me give you an example. My cousin, Robert, passed away years and years ago. And one of the things that happens in our family is we all have night paralysis issues. A lot of my family they're very superstitious. So they refer to it as witch rides, or the witches are coming to ride you at night because you did something bad, or they're trying to steal your soul. So that's kind of a southern kind of superstition that my family has lived with for a long time. Robert, he also had out-of-body experiences, but didn't know that's what they were.
Okay, I'm going to stop you again because that's so interesting. You're saying this has been a genetic trait in your family.
As far back as I can remember, great great grandmother. It's been
remarkable.
Told since I was a little kid, but I've always thought that's what it was, and it's always been something terrible and horrifying, and none of us liked it. And I was the first one to change and just try to be an observer and discover a whole new aspect to it.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I find the genetic link very interesting.
I've been all over the place, and I wondered that too. That's because I'm a researcher. I was wondering, okay, is it in my family? Like I said in the beginning, I thought it was a psychosis or a neurological problem. But what I found, having been lucky enough to go all over the world talking to people about this, is it doesn't matter what you are, it doesn't matter what you believe. People of all walks of life have these kind of experiences. And what's really cool is I do this experiment when I talk to people. So let's say I have 100 people in the room. One of the things is I start doing is I start mentioning the different aspects of the separation process. I say, if you've ever experienced this and after going to bed at night, raise your hand and keep your hand up. And by the time I touch on the paralysis, the vibration, hearing your name being called, because that's one of them,
right,
and flying dreams and all these other things, about 70% of the audience out of 100 still have their hands up. So that's globally about 70% of people are having these, they can remember having these experiences. They just haven't pieced all the puzzles together, mm-hmm, to figure out, yes, this is something that has to do with having an out-of-body experience.
Well, this is why I believe it. So many people know about it or have done it or wish they could do it. That I believe it. I've been told enough. I absolutely believe it. Now, a couple of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something that remains tethered to your body? I mean, there are stories of a silver cord, that kind of thing. What do you know?
Right. Well, I've looked for it. I don't doubt that some people have seen it, experienced it. I have a theory about that I presented in my book. I think it's like there's something called a duality of consciousness that I've discovered, and that means there's part of us thinks like you and I are thinking right now, and then there's another part of us that thinks on a very, very high, a higher level. The two are not disconnected. So if you're fearful in your exploration, I think that, and I may be wrong.
Like training wheels.
It's like breadcrumbs.
Training wheels.
You know, yeah, you don't feel totally detached from your physical body. And a lot of people say, well, how do I find my way back? Can I get back in? The silver cord kind of gives you that warm, fuzzy, or security, knowing that if I follow this, no matter how far I go, I'm still connected. Now, that's how I see it, because I had never found it, and I've been out a lot of times, and I've tried to go as many places as I possibly could, flying even into space. So I've never had that experience. Of course, I'm not afraid, but I would imagine that if I were, it would be a really welcome security blanket for me.
Jeez, it's like, doing an EVA from the space station with no tether.
Right. Like the old days, we used to have the umbilical, like when Ed White was walking Gemini, he had the umbilical that he would use.
Uh-huh.
And then later on, when I was in the space program, we used the MMU, which is the Manned Maneuvering Unit, which is totally like in Gravity, the movie Gravity, which was totally untethered.
Oh, by the way, how did you like the movie Gravity?
Oh, man, I was so disappointed.
Were you?
I have trouble watching space movies. I have trouble watching aircraft movies because they use the wrong aircraft. I have problems with this new Steven Spielberg movie with the Francis Gary Powers being shot down because they're using the wrong aircraft. So I know too much about that. I even have problems flying on airplanes because I'm looking out at the flight control. So that I had a lot of technical problems with the movie Gravity.
That's kind of disappointing. You saw it in 3D?
No, I didn't see it in 3D.
Okay.
But let me tell you, the technical problems I had is as way before I worked on the space program, the astronauts have the capability of maneuvering just in case they get detached from the space station or any vehicle. That spacesuit that they have has these little firing jets. If you go on the internet, and you can
right.
see these little jets,
yes.
And they have the capability of coming back. Another thing is that the physics was all wrong, because when George Clooney and Sandra Bullock were flying through space holding on to the line, and she grabbed onto one structure, and he was way out at the end of an umbilical.
Yeah. Yeah.
All she had to do was just jerk it one time,
right.
And that momentum would have brought him right to her. So I had a problem with the physics, but I tried to suspend that and just enjoy it for a theatrical presentation.
I was going to say, somebody who can disassociate themselves enough to actually travel out of their body ought to be able to suspend something or another to enjoy a movie. But I get it. I completely get it, I'm afraid. I don't like to see flaws either. Well, okay.
It's hard.
All right, so...
Because, for instance, you know that new movie that's come out, which I really think is going to be exciting, is the U2 being shot down over Russia. Well, since I was on the U2s when I was in the Air Force, I was a crew chief on the R model, they're using an R model, and Francis Gary Powers was shot down in an A model. But that's me, you know. That's me.
Well, so ruin another one for us.
I'm sorry. That's me.
Did you see San Andreas?
No, I haven't seen that.
Oh, you should see that. And in 3D at that. Okay. All right. Anyway, back to where we were with OBEs. And you have now, I believe, expanded your research from OBEs to other aspects of the paranormal, correct?
Right. Yes, yes. One of the things I wanted, you know, I noticed that there's a lot of people out there, God bless them, collecting paranormal data. orbs, EVPs, electronic voice phenomena.
Yes.
Different types of video, digital video imagery.
Right.
Things like that. But one of the reasons I got into it is because I was really trying to draw a connection, because I was having encounters with deceased relatives, and I was trying to see if there was something physically I could do to connect the two. And that's why I looked into the technology that was available today and the activities that people were conducting around the world.
All right, slow up. Slow up. I mean, you just blurt these things out. You were having encounters with dead relatives. Now, that's an artifact of an NDE,
yeah,
not an OBE.
As a matter of fact, yeah, I didn't tell you. We didn't. I didn't know that I was going to be going into a realm that we go into when we die. I didn't know about that.
So you're now telling me, wait a minute, you telling me you can have an OBE and go into the same territory you would go into with an NDE?
Yeah. An NDE takes you a little further, but everybody exits in that lower level.
Oh, well,
in the beginning.
Yeah, if you start seeing dead relatives, buddy, that's NDE territory to me.
Yeah, but they don't. That's the thing that we think that we go through a tunnel and we get locked away and we stay there. That's not really how it works.
No.
No one gets locked away. That may be part of your panoramic past life experience. Because you've heard people say, my whole life flashed before me, and you hear about people talking about they experience all the emotions that they've impressed on people through their lives. So you may go through that. You may see the light. You may have an encounter with a higher being.
Really?
And have a past, but that's not the end. You still exist, so I was shocked when I had an encounter on more than two occasions with my deceased aunt, which I didn't expect. I didn't know that's where they were. I had no idea. But it happened on more than one occasion, and it was profound. It wasn't just like, oh, by the way. No, it affected me emotionally, because I'd never communicated with a person in that sense, in that way. Like now we're talking. But in that sense, you not only communicate mentally, but you feel the emotion that person, you share emotions. So whatever I'm feeling, my aunt could feel, and whatever she was feeling, I could feel. And that's the part that profoundly affected me.
Holy smokes, doctor. You're taking a leap that I've heard nobody ever take. I've never heard
it. In my book.
It's always in the book, right? I know.
Yeah. But
is it your new book?
No, it's in Soul Traveler.
Soul Traveler.
The new book is Journey of the Cosmic Soul. What happens is, though, Art, this is what fueled the fire, is that while we were having this exchange, I suddenly realized I'm no different than she is, except I have a physical body to go back to. That had never dawned on me.
Well, but it's not a big difference.
I didn't believe it. I knew it. And that changed everything.
Okay. That's a pretty big difference. You had a body to go back to. She didn't.
Right.
And you said you could feel what she felt. She could feel what you felt, right?
Right, exactly.
So what can you tell me about the other side?
There's nothing to be afraid of.
Well, that's
it's
nice.
Home. It's where we came from. This is very temporary. This is the paranormal. That's not the paranormal. That's the normal. We will be welcomed and loved and not judged. The only judgment really comes from you, judging yourself on how you lived your life.
I know, I'm afraid of that.
There's no discrimination. Someone wrote me and asked me, they said, I'm gay, and if I go on the other side, do they discriminate against gay? There's no discrimination. There's none of that. None of the earthly things that we have here, that we experience here. And that's the part that we do so often, is we try to humanize and take our human experiences and apply it to something that is far from being human or even physical. It's very, very different. And it's incredibly intense and loving. Like the people who had near-death experiences, they all will describe when they come back from that experience, it was the most incredible love they'd ever experienced in their lives.
Okay. I'm trying to digest this, that you can actually meet with people who have passed. That is,
yeah.
It takes it to a whole nother level. I have become so interested in NDEs. I've actually told a couple of researchers, and it's the truth. You know, I'm 70 years old now, Albert. If I had an opportunity to go with a medical team that had all the right stuff to bring me back, I would be tempted. I'd be tempted to try a flat line.
Right.
Just to see what's on the other side. But what you're saying is you don't need to. You can find out without flat line.
Yes. Yes. If it's meant to be, there's a lot going on. But if it's meant to be and you're capable, you can have an encounter with someone who's passed. I don't hear a lot of people have, because everybody differs on their ability. But the ones that I have heard of, and especially I have to talk about Robert Monroe, he has had, it describes in his three books, incredible experiences with formerly living human beings and non-human beings that have lived. Because not every entity or entity that you encounter will have had a human life.
Dr. Taylor, do you think that you have a genetic predisposition to this that gives you a really, really big advantage over other people trying to do OBEs?
No. I think maybe I'm the person that when Bigfoot or the monster is running at you, I'm the person that doesn't put the camera down. So that may be a defect, all right, rather than a bonus.
Oh, it is a defect. It's definitely a defect.
Yeah.
Anybody who would stand there and not put the camera down as Bigfoot charge deserves every NDE and even permanent thing they get.
I'm so curious. I want to know for myself. It's not about me teaching anybody or preaching or any of those things. It was happening to me, and I was either going crazy or I had to find some kind of rational answer to what was happening, and I had no idea it was going to touch on something that had to do with, you know, the eternity, the existence of a soul, and an environment where souls, you know, live or go back to. I had no idea that I was thinking, you know, I was taught about heaven and hell and purgatory and those type of things.
So you're honestly telling me that you would stand there with a camera taking video of Bigfoot as he charged you, so that when the detectives came and said, oh, look at the arm over there and the leg over there, and we'll find the head, you know, we'll get some people out here and find the head. They'd be able to have the camera. They'd get the camera, and they'd realize you held it until Bigfoot got you.
Well, I may run at the last minute, but I can tell you this. I've been on some paranormal investigations where some really scary stuff happened.
Yes.
And I was the one standing there with literally a couple members of my team ran out of the location that we were in fear, screaming, and I stayed there filming. I'm just curious about this, these type of things, and I want to know. So, you know, there's a lot of people who are curious. People want to go to Mars, and they don't care if they come back because they want to know what it feels like.
Would you do that, by the way, one-way ticket to Mars?
No, I want a return trip. I wouldn't even go on the shuttle after I learned all the things I learned about it, so no.
Wait a minute. Wait. you wouldn't go on the shuttle in view of all the things you have learned?
Yeah, no.
Hate to come back to Earth that hard, but what are you talking about?
Reliability. I worked in reliability and maintainability. And what reliability and maintainability is that we predict when an item is going to fail and in how many different ways it's going to fail.
Yes.
The shuttle had a million moving parts, and the reliability on everything there's no 100% reliability. And unfortunately, the way the shuttle was designed is that when you have certain failures, it could be a catastrophic failure. So I knew about that already. I knew that it wasn't a matter of time of if it was going to have disaster was going to happen. It was about when and how many. I knew that. The numbers indicated that. So, no, I wouldn't have.
Huh. Did you pass along any of that informed knowledge to the guys who were sitting on those firecrackers?
I wasn't on the space, the shuttle program. I interfaced with them because I was responsible for the mating adapter, pressurized mating adapter.
Yes, yes.
So I was on space station, so they shared information with me. I assume they knew what it was because they shared it with me, so that wasn't my area. If I had been on the shuttle, I definitely would have brought it to the attention because we're talking about astronaut space.
All right, got it. We've got a break. We're going to open phone lines soon. This is Midnight in the Desert. When I think back on all day, he opened up our minds. And I still can hear him say,
proudly part of the Dark Matter Digital Network. This is Midnight in the Desert with your host, Art Bell. Now, here's Art.
Dr. Albert Taylor is my guest. We're talking about OBEs. That's out-of-body experiences. You can do it. I wish I could do it. I've done it, but just instantaneously, and it scared the fire out of me, and I didn't have the guts to go forward. We're now going to open phone lines, so I'm going to give my phone lecture. Sorry. 101. And here it is. I mean, you're going to get this a lot because we've got affiliates that are going to be joining or are joining and all that kind of stuff. So when we open the lines, here's the way it works. We have one massive public line which has many, many numbers that roll over. That way I don't have to go east of the Rockies, west of the Rockies, on the Rockies. You know, I don't have to do that. It's area code, the big public number. Area code 952-225-5278. That's the modern way to do it. One number, many lines. Area code 952-225-5278. Now, aside from that, we accept calls by Skype. Now, here's how you do it. It's really simple. If you have an iPhone or an Android, just go and download Skype. When you get it, become a little familiar with it, please. Look around. And after you have done so, here's what you do. If you're in North America, America or Canada, you go in and you hit the little plus sign on Skype, and you're adding a contact. That would be us. We're the contact. And so you would put in simply MITD51. And then you'll notice we're on your contact list. It's that easy. If you're outside of North America, it's MITD55. That's Midnight in the Desert, MITD55. And from then on, we'll be in your contact list. And so when you want to call us, you pick up your phone and go, just press the contact. And away you go. And, you know, Skype, in most cases, for those who know how to do it, particularly when calling from a, you know, a smartphone, is so incredibly good that you might as well sound like you're right here in the studio. And now one little extension, one minor extension to my phone lecture, and that is I'm adding a first-time caller line. This is exclusively for those of you that have never called this program. And that number is area code 775-285-5800. Easy enough, right? But you must be a first-time caller. So you only actually get to do this one time. Well, let's think back. There have been many variations of this show that I've done. I guess you could do it again in the sense that, well, you were there during Dark Matter. You were there during the prior show. So you could still be a first-time caller to this show, right? Area code 775-285-5800. Sorry, I was sort of debating with myself to some degree. So we're opening all those lines right now for Dr. Taylor. Doctor, welcome back.
Thank you.
I would like to ask something in the list of questions. I do get a list of questions. I don't very frequently follow them, but I do get a list of questions. And I understand that you are in some way profoundly disappointed in the paranormal community worldwide, and I would like to know why that is.
Well, let me say, I don't fault them. I don't think anybody's done anything intentional. But I think that and this is based on the different locations, geographical locations and countries I've been to, is we have become complacent. And we have gotten to the point where we've settled for very literally tidbits of paranormal data. We've settled for orbs. We've settled for just collecting EVPs that some of them, and very few, are interactive, but most don't make any sense. You'll hear somebody say something, and they'll try to interpret what it is, but it doesn't make any sense. And we've become satisfied with that. But the thing is through my experiences, is when you leave your body, just the opposite happens. You go into a super conscious level where you can think on in many, many diverse terms, but the EVPs that I've seen from a lot of different people sounds like the person is developmentally disabled, and that's just not the way it is. So I think that, yeah, there are, and let me tell you this. One of the things I was curious about was how do humans affect the collection of EVPs? Because most of the EVPs I've ever heard, there was somebody collecting it or asking questions.
Yes.
That's where my robots came in, is because they were capable of recording the same type of digital or audio tapes or information, and I was able to collect EVPs with my robots, and they weren't asking any questions. So that told me that this is going on all the time, not necessarily because we have asked the question.
Okay, now you have to back up again. So you built robots to collect EVPs. Is that the bottom line?
EVPs and photographic data and night vision data, yes.
And how much success did you have?
A lot. Quite a bit, as a matter of fact.
Really?
Yeah, tremendous amount. In the years past, I've even played a couple for you that were quite startling.
Yes. Do you have, Halloween is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always looking for EVPs, especially good ones. Do you have some good ones?
I have, excuse me. What I've done is I've categorized them into indiscernible, semi-discernible, discernible, and then interactive. And I have some interactive EVPs. And what an interactive EVP is, where you ask a question and it actually responds.
That's right.
And responds to your question.
Yes.
I have some that are discernible, where they're just saying things that may not necessarily apply to what you're asking or what you're doing, but you can understand it. Then I have the semi, which says a few words here and there, but you have to guess at what they mean. And then I have noises and various bizarre, indiscernible voice-like things that I've recorded. So I have those four different categories.
Do those come from four different kinds of entities?
I would say the discernible, indiscernible, and the lower ones are kind of like a background noise, kind of like an echo. They're not interactive. They're always there because the robot seems to pick them up. If it was only there when humans, then I'd say they were, had an interactive quality to them. But because the robots can pick them up, no matter if you can drive away for miles and the robot still records it,
okay,
I'd say
okay.
They're like a background noise.
Yes, doctor, your robots.
Yeah.
Your robots were... Describe your robots to me. They could physically move. They could take video. They obviously record audio. What were they capable of doing, and why use a robot?
Well, one of my more popular ones that I really have used quite a bit is it has motion sensors. It also has an internal EMF meter, electromagnetic field meter, and it has directional probe, which it can turn the probe toward the source of the EMF and move the whole entire, the whole robot will move and follow or chase the EMF reading and record while it's doing that. And it will maneuver around furniture, walls, whatever. So that's one of my favorite ones. And through that one, and it will also send back the data to a base station so I can record it on a recording device. So that's one of my favorite ones. Another one is that I have, it's very small, and I can, it's semi-autonomous, where I can control it via remote control, and while it's in a particular location, I can send it a program where it will go into autonomous mode and start patrolling and recording data on its own. So those are the kinds that I've been using over the years, and they've collected data.
That is so totally cool. It really figures somebody who worked on the U.S. space program would do what you're doing if they moved into the paranormal, and you've done it.
Well, think about it. You know, I remember when I was at Langley, and they have a really awesome museum there. Is, you know, I think it was Voyager. They have a model of Voyager there. And it made sense to me that we use, because I'd been in the space program for a long time, I was even on a design team of GPS when we just had it, when no, didn't have it in cell phones, just the military was using it. Mm-hmm. So I've been in the space program for a very long time, and it didn't make sense to me that the paranormal was another unknown, and for the unknowns in outside the Earth's atmosphere, we use probes. So it made perfectly good sense that to use a probe for the unknowns that are here in the paranormal community, and they're not afraid, they don't run off, they don't have they don't guess at what it is, they don't have desires on what they want it to be. They just record data, and that's the part that was really intriguing to me, and I wanted it to be autonomous, so I programmed it to think for itself.
And they really would stay there until Bigfoot crushed them.
It probably would, but the video footage you'd get would be incredible.
Yes, it would. And that's the whole idea, I suppose. Look, we've got a million phone calls. People want to talk to you, so let's give it a shot here. First-time caller line, I think Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Oh, that's me, Art.
It is.
My name is Mike. Boy, it's a thrill to talk to you, and especially tonight with Dr. Taylor. I'm trying to make this brief.
Thank you.
I've drove trucks for many years, and around 2000, I went to nights, and a couple coworkers told me about the Art Bell Show. But not long after that, you had Albert on about Soul Traveler, and as a child, many, many years I had the opportunity to fly around and out of body, and I didn't appreciate what it was at that age. And it stopped for a couple decades. And one of the things you had mentioned on our show back then was the sleep, you know, disruption, which, of course, going to nights did. So I started having them again, and I was thrilled that it, just like Art, I kept popping back.
Awesome.
Okay.
Well, that's awesome. I love that. I love to hear that.
Okay, if you have a question, sir, please go ahead.
I wanted to tell you, as a cat lover, Art, you'll like this. I had a young cat that loved to, basically, I had an out-of-body where I interacted with my kitten. And it was very bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
I was home, and the cat always wanted to be picked up and put up above closets in our bedroom. Anytime I got up out of bed, he would beg or jump up and want to be picked up, and that was something we did. So I was laying there, I went out of body, and I was trying to keep calm. I could had this presence of mind, like you said. I'm floating, and we had a canopy bed, and I'm thinking, man, I'm going to go through this canopy. Mm-hmm. But at the moment, I look down, I see my cat asleep at my legs, and just like in an old ghost movie, I saw his spirit. He looked up at me, and he kind of separated, and he reached up, stood up, and tried to put his claws on me. And I'm freaking out because it's like those old hot air balloon movies where you don't want, you're trying to I was trying to stay calm, and sure enough, we both popped back. I woke up, I lifted my head, and he was asleep like nothing had happened.
All right, so you're saying that you and your cat both had an OBE. One good thing about it, if you get scratched out of body, when you come back, you're all healed up, right, Albert?
Yeah, and no cat fever. No astral cat fever. That's an awesome, you know, one of the things that used to happen to me when I would leave my body is I had a German Shepherd, and he would be under my window, and with the moment I detached and started floating upward, he would start barking like crazy.
Really?
And then when I would return to my physical body and reconnect, he'd stop. And this went on almost all night, so animals are, you know, it's probably very normal to them to sense these subtle energies, of one of which is our astral form, and it's probably no big deal to them because they're born into that ability and see it all the time.
Well, they don't have the hang-ups we have. Let's go to outside the country in Harmony. Where are you, Harmony?
I'm in New Zealand.
New Zealand. New Zealand, okay.
I'm in the top of the South Island.
Okay.
I've had quite a few out-of-body phenomena in the last couple of decades, or even more longer than that. But I had one that was particularly profound, and I thought I might share it with you. We were actually talking about astral projection, and my friend said, hey, he said, well, if you want to astral project, first thing you do is connect your consciousness to something that you perceive to be outside of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So I was walking through the woods. This is up in Bellingham, Washington, years ago, and I thought, oh, I'm going to try this. And it was a beautiful day, and I see a tree, and it's about, 20 or 30 yards away from me.
Yes.
And I thought, okay, I'm going to astral project to that tree over there for starters. So I stood still, and I thought, I am the tree. The tree and I are one. Hello, tree. And right when I thought that, this bird flew up and landed right by my feet. And it just sat there. And it must have been there for half a minute or longer. It didn't identify me as being anything other than a tree. And it was such a profound experience right then, because I realized that was what the power of it was.
So you were, for a moment, you were a tree.
I was a tree, and the bird saw me as being a tree. And that's why there was no fear within this little bird. As soon as I began to think, oh, hey, maybe I'm St. Francis or something, I'm going to go pick up the bird, whatever, the bird flew away.
That is so cool. I really appreciate that story. That's amazing. So you can, in essence, make yourself.
He identified so much with it. His consciousness could project and identify with the tree, which is a living thing.
Yeah.
Is that the bird, which has senses that I don't understand fully, was able to. Did not perceive him as a normal threat as they do in humanoids generally.
So the bird, he was a tree?
He wasn't a threat, let's say.
He wasn't a threat.
He wasn't a threat or something to run away from. He was just another part of the environment.
Hmm.
Now, that's interesting. That's really fascinating. You know, but I have some friends who are animal whispers or whatever you want to call them, and I have seen some things that I cannot understand on how they can connect with dogs or cats or even wild animals, lions and things like that, and they don't harm them, and they have this connection, and I don't understand that, but I think it's just another talent that the soul has to connect with this environment.
Right. And by the way, while we're on the subject, that's really what this is. I mean, would you certify that more or less, that what we're talking about is that thing called a soul that is actually leaving the body?
Definitely, because we would be very in error if we thought of ourselves as the physical body and just the humanoid being. There is something far greater than that that is made of stardust, let's say, because we're like star children, and so is everything else around us. So we're not separated from the physical and animal things in our environment. We're connected to them. The only thing that separates us that I've noticed is when we take a fearful stance. And that brings in a whole other set of circumstances. But we're connected to everything around us.
Well, that sounds wonderful to me. But, Doctor, I can imagine the human brain, as complex as it is, being able to project itself with what we are talking about as an OBE without it necessarily having to be what we traditionally call the soul. And we don't understand certainly everything about our brains. They're incredibly complex, and frankly, we don't know. Doctor, hold on. Sorry, I don't mean to be drifting away from this, but why couldn't the human brain do this without it being what we classically call the soul, which is a religious thing, kind of, sort of, right? Don't pay any attention to me. I have no idea what I'm talking about.
Midnight in the Desert is a wild trip across the Dazed Divisor. Get your ticket to ride by calling 1-952-CALL-ART. That's 1-952-225-5278.
Dr. Albert Taylor is my guest, and he's a very patient man. And these are very, very difficult things to talk about. They really are. I can imagine, I guess this is what I was trying to say, I can imagine that our brains might have the capacity to project the self without necessarily projecting what we think of classically as the soul. But you would argue with that, I'm sure, Doctor, right?
Well, okay, let me explain. There's a couple of things that I wanted to share with you. Is the difference between spirituality and religion is the difference between being human and being an American. You are a human no matter where you are. You choose to be an American. That's the difference. You're a spirit no matter what you choose. You can choose any religion you want, but you're a spirit, basically. This is the thing. I started off with a bunch of questions. I wanted to know, why is this happening? Why, if it's just an intellectual brain experience, then why, I've been a member of the International Association of Near-Death Studies for quite a long, 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 long time, and I've taught 8 million people have had near-death experiences in the United States alone. So why, when some of these people suffer the body that they're occupying suffers a physical death, and everything goes to zero, and then they come back, how come, if it's just the brain, now they can't wear watches because watches stop? How come light bulbs blow out, don't last as long as they should? How come when they go to the grocery store, cash registers malfunction? If it's just the death of a physical organism, none of those should be happening. It doesn't make any sense. And there's... it doesn't happen every time with everybody, but there, if you look at 8 million people, you're going to have a higher number that has these difficulties.
Well,
how come? A friend of mine who was diagnosed with cancer 15, almost 20 years ago, was given 5 years, and had a near-death experience. How come her cancer, she's in remission and she's still alive? Because her awareness, as according to her, has changed on who and what she is. I can't answer those by just looking at the brain.
Doctor, you don't affect cash registers, do you?
No, I haven't had a near-death experience, but I have talked to people who do affect electronic devices, who can't wear watches because the watches actually stop.
Right.
Who bulbs do blow out. It happens. It happens quite a bit, and it's happened years and years ago, and it's happening now. So if we're just machines, organic machines, that doesn't make any sense that we should be able to affect these items.
Well, I was going to say, if you are that kind of a person, they should keep you the heck away from the shuttle with a million moving parts. All right, let's try the first-time caller line up in Victoria, B.C., I think. Hello?
Hello. Yeah, I love the show. I'm really interested in the subject.
Yeah, me too.
I'm just wondering, like, when you're in a very deep sleep, and do you think it's possible that you start seeing things that you can't remember and that would cause you to react and My wife says sometimes when I fall asleep and I'm in a very deep sleep, I start to scream.
Oh.
Definitely. Well, you know, let me give you an example. How many times have you had a dream where you didn't remember the dream till maybe days later when something triggered it? Well, that memory of that dream was inside of you somewhere, but it took some outward stimulus to trigger that. So, yes, you can have a dream, and if that, I don't think that dream is just dormant. It could have some type of effect on you when it's triggered by some type of physical stimulus. So, yes, I do believe that is possible.
Okay.
All right. All right, then. Thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. Take care. And people from all over have questions about this. Let's try Kurt on Skype. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Bell.
Howdy.
Hi, and hi, Dr. Taylor.
Hello,
I wanted to tell you about my out-of-body experience / near-death experience. I was about 12 years old, and my brother and I, Scotty, were horse-playing. And I was sitting on a chair on the back porch here, about 20 feet from where I am now. And he began to choke me really bad and just kept choking me and choking me. And I fell out, and I was out of my body. And I saw, I didn't just see a light, but my vision was light. And I was out of my body. I was not physical, but I was, all of a sudden I started seeing like 10 or 12 people. And they were in this light, and they were all praying really, really heavy. Imagine 12 or 15 people just praying continually. And I knew them. I'm thinking they're like my great-grandparents and my great-greats, but I can feel just the love and that right. I knew them, but I didn't know them. But they were praying me back. And within about, I don't know how long it was, but I just saw all of these angels and love, and I knew all of these people. I could see their bodies, but just in this huge light, and
right.
They were all praying to me and praying for me. And before I knew it, when I came to, it was like coming out of this trance. I don't know how to explain. I was just, and I came back. And I began to cry because I realized what had just happened to me. I had just gone and seen something. Mm-hmm. And to this day,
right.
I think of that. And I forever now know that there is an afterlife. But I did know those people who were praying for me.
Right.
But that's just a forever memory I have. And I know that now being that I'm 47, that was a piece of my life's puzzle to help me in my later years, to help everything I've learned since then, it all fits together now. But I know now for a fact that there is an afterlife.
Okay, well, I really appreciate the call, and I'm jealous.
You know, I've heard children talk about their near-death experience, and they talk about a meeting on the other side, relatives, a grandfather who had passed away before they were even born. Encountering someone he knew, but he had no conscious physical memory of them is quite common. I have had a friend who suffered a horrible asthma attack and was rushed to the hospital.
Yeah.
And during the process, when he was being placed on the gurney, all of a sudden he realized he had taken his last breath, and the pain in his chest was so intense, and all of a sudden there was a pop. And the pain was gone, and then the next thing he knew, he was standing outside of this with this crowd of people who were looking at this guy on a gurney. And he thought to himself, what are you doing taking care of him? You should be taking care of me. But then he said beings came up behind him, and this guy is not a spiritual person or religious by no means. And he said these beings came up behind him, and he said he knew them, but he couldn't think of who they were. And there was one particular one that was brilliant and wise and seemed like a parent type of figure. And that person said, you can go back if you want to, but you can't stay. And he thought about it for a minute, and then he realized because of his son, he wanted to return. And with that thought, all of a sudden he was back in his physical body, and the pain had returned, and they rushed him in to stabilize him. He called me the next day and told me this. And when I was shocked to hear this, because I know this guy. I've known him since I was a kid. And he said to me, he kept saying, but I didn't know. And I said, well, what didn't you know? And he said, I didn't know that somebody cared and they were there for me. I didn't know. It changed his life. He has never, ever been the same.
I bet. All right. Let us try Chicago. I think you're on the air.
That's it, Chicago. Hey, Art.
Hey.
Hey, Dr. Taylor, I love your charisma, and I'm glad that you can still have a little giggle in between here and there talking about, you know, this type of stuff. What I wanted to share with you guys tonight is that a couple nights ago I had a very, very vivid dream, so vivid that I woke up and I fell right back asleep and picked up pretty much right where it left off. And the thing that really boggled my mind the most was the fact that, you know, a lot of guys get these dreams where we're about to have sex with a beautiful woman or a girl we're hot for, and we can never get back to that, or we get woken up. This was something that messed to see. That's what
actually, my experience has been that it never comes to a logical, or what should be a logical, conclusion.
It never makes any sense, right? Exactly, exactly. But here, back to my my story here. This dream was just so vivid that it messed with me. It woke me up with literally with a feeling of like I had a cold. I was almost running a fever, and you know, I went up, got some water, and took about a 5-10 minute break, and fell right back asleep. And pretty much, I entered the same door again. And I don't really want to discuss the details of the dreams or involvements or, you know, or what I do or anything like that. I am a Army veteran and, you know, all that. It wasn't anything graphic of those lines, but it was a lot of messages, and it was stuff so weird. Like, I was stuck in the same city here in the Loop in the Chicagoland area, and I was just going through doors, and I was having people giving me offers about, hey, you can live like this if you just this, and we're not doing anything wrong if you do this. And I, you know, I thought I left one guy that was looking at me all weird, and next thing you know, I just drive a block down, and he's standing at the bus stop again, and it just messed with me so bad. I have never had any type of dream like this ever in my life.
Okay, well, why did you mention you were in the military? Must have been a reason for that.
Because there's a lot of, we have a lot of, you know, dreams related to PTSD. And I immediately, you know, I threw that out because it was nothing completely at all.
I understand.
Anything related to military.
Right. Got it.
Yeah. So I just thought I'd, you know, get that out there. And it, what really got me was that it's just like it stayed with me till pretty much maybe till about 3, 4, 5 o'clock the next day, where I finally, you know, I got over. I said, okay, I had this dream, but here we got Dr. Taylor talking about this type of stuff tonight, and I just thought I'd call in and, you know.
Well, I'm glad you did, but what he's talking about is way beyond a dream or even a restarted dream. It is very unusual to be able to restart a dream, but OBEs are a big step beyond either one of those. Right.
Well, you can't really use a light switch and say OBE dreams and click it on and off to either one, because it's more of a rheostat. You turn it up to OBEs, you turn it down to lucid dreams, and you turn it down to just dreams.
Uh-huh.
Well, because this seemed to be reoccurring, and a lot of dreams, maybe they won't matter, but there are some that affect you and get your attention, and those are the important ones. And what a dream can be is a form of communication, either from a higher aspect of yourself or from a consciousness that is external. And what's really important when these dreams affect you on that level, they aren't fleeting, is to document the dream. Because what I found is dreams are designed to give you a change in perspective on something that's going on in your life or the path you're following in your life. And when you have a change of perspective because of that, then you do different things. You're a little bit wiser maybe, or you make rational decisions. So it's really important to document the dream. You may not quite understand it, but it's like a piece of the puzzle. If you don't keep all the pieces, you never get to see the entire picture.
Okay. Going back to something the caller said, it seems to me that if you have a really sexy dream, we've already covered the fact they don't ever seem to culminate all the way, but if you have that, that's your body telling you that, yo, buddy, you haven't had sex in a while, and time to be thinking about that?
Well, that is on two different levels. It is on a physical level, which allows us to, you know, propagate the species. And then the sexual desire, sexual energy, is on a non-physical level. And the thing about it, some people have sex in the astral, and sexual encounters in the astral. But the thing about it is, well, I don't think in the astral it's to have, you know, to procreate, because I haven't seen any astral babies running around yet.
No. You're telling me, wait. You're telling me you can have sex on the astral plane, and if so, can you complete the act in the astral plane?
Yeah, you can. It's an energy thing.
Oh, man, I'm jealous.
It's more intense than a physical experience.
Really?
But let me share this with you, because it's something greater than what you think it is. A friend of mine had a near-death experience. She drowned and on a scuba accident off the coast of Catalina.
Yes.
When her respirator, her regulator, failed while she was deep down.
Right.
And so she tried to make it to the surface, couldn't, ran out of air, and the next thing she knew, she was floating above her body. She watched them recover her body, but during that process, she ended up entering into the tunnel that we hear so much about.
Yes.
And eventually, at the end of the tunnel, there was a light that she merged with and had a panoramic past life review, like Daniel Brinkley has talked about. During that merging process, the way she describes it, and she still describes it all these years later, as being orgasmic. So for her to have that sensation during that non-sexual situation and describe it the same way, I think is a hint to what that really is about, and it may not necessarily be all about what we think it is in the physical
world. Well, she must have led a really good life.
It changed her life. She dedicated herself to helping people who had near-death experiences to talk about it and develop different research groups.
I can imagine my past or my life review when I die, and I can imagine it in many ways, but none of them would I describe as orgasmic.
I haven't had a near-death experience, but it is really, really common. And especially when you first come out of your body on the astral plane, depending on what your focus is, that encounter, it is like an exchange of energy, but it is sexual.
I mean, after all, sex is a function of our bodies, right? It's a physical function. So you would think out of body. Pardon me?
It's a consciousness thing, too, because I was doing a little bit of research into this, is no one that I've talked to could describe to me an orgasmic experience. You know what it feels like, but very few people can actually put it into words. So look at that, and then what she talked about, merging with a higher aspect of something, be it God, Jesus, or her higher self, that it was very similar. So that leads me to believe that there is a lot more than just on the physical level, because it exists in multiple areas on the non-physical level, and it means something.
Okay. All right. Clint, on Skype, you're on the air.
Hi there, guys. Hi there, Dr. Taylor. A couple things that I wanted you to touch on is what is your thought about getting into the out-of-body experience after a few drinks or what have you? I've had an experience where I had a couple drinks, And I'd practiced when I was young. I'd seen the Shirley Taylor or Shirley MacLaine movie in the late 80s. Found this basically a handbook on it, an early handbook. I'm not sure who it was by, this little tiny handbook. And I got into it. And basically one night when I wasn't wanting to do it, it happened to me. And I lost all control of my physical or of my astral body. I couldn't move my hands, couldn't move my arms. All of a sudden, I shot out a window, and I landed, you know, shot out a, it was about three stories. I hit the ground. I didn't hit the ground. I almost hit the ground. I landed about an inch away, and then I just started shooting across this field. And I had no control, and as I was about to hit a building, I just woke up.
All right, so you had a couple drinks.
So I'd had a couple drinks, yes.
All right, well, then maybe you were like the guy thrown out of the saloon, you know, just through the ground.
I had skipped across the lake like a rock.
Yeah.
No, you know, the thing with any drug that's able to sedate you, alcohol or anything, there are some in its initial stages that if it relaxes you, that's one of the keys to having an experience. But if you add more to it, it can go lead to the point where it becomes an inhibitor and actually keep you from achieving a conscious level. So,
Dr. Taylor, I've got to ask you about drugs like DMT, mm-hmm. some of these really heavy-duty drugs that
right.
cause like those kinds of experiences. What do you know, if anything? Yeah, ayahuasca, sure.
Yeah. Well, that's many indigenous people, and now a lot of modern people are having spiritual experiences with drugs. I think it was Timothy Leary had experimented with LSD in the past.
Yes.
And had spiritual experiences.
Yes
it is possible. Is it preferable? No. Wouldn't you like to just be able to do it by practicing a few things that you don't have to worry about the law or damaging your physical body or something like that? You want to do it. Since it's a very natural part of our existence, you want to do it naturally because that way you can do it as many times as you want. But yes, people have reported having spiritual high consciousness experiences by using various types of drugs.
Okay.
But I don't necessarily recommend it.
All right. Buffalo, New York. Hello there.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I was just taking an allergy pill. You caught me off guard. Dr. Taylor, I have a question for you as far as, and hello, Art.
Hello.
You scolded me earlier.
Hello.
I think I had an out-of-body, by the way you're describing it, but I'm not seeing light and I'm not floating over my body. I can reach the point where I go to sleep and I relax to the point where I feel, it only happened once because I've stopped a few, where I feel like I'm actually separating and then my body is gone and I'm all consciousness. But I'm never in the light. It's always dark. So this one time that I left my body, I asked for familiarity, so I asked that my grandmother come to me, and it took some doing. She with no body, I felt like we were holding hands and we were floating, but yet I'm all in my head consciousness, but no body. And I said, I'd like to see Daddy. And she says, I don't know if you can go there. And I said, well, let's try. And she says, all right. So she dropped me off at some place, and that's where I started seeing things. And I was in a holding center, like a room, and I had to ask for my father to come out from wherever he was, and he was escorted so that I could talk to him. And in this room, there were open, wooden windows, but it was like a 6- or 8-sided room I was in, and they were persecuted souls. They were not in a good place. I could feel that. So when my father came forward, my father says, "How did you find me?" And I said, "Are you kidding?" And, you know, I says, "I've been trying to, you know, I've been meditating and I've been trying." To get in touch with you for a long time. And he says, I can't believe you found me. And,
that description almost sounds like you were visiting somebody in jail, you know, and the guards brought him out for you.
I kind of felt like it was purgatory. It wasn't hell. But, and I knew I was protected because I know how to protect myself, you know, to keep myself protected because I dream a lot.
Oof.
Family
right.
members.
Right.
I knew I was protected, and I was telling other people, you know, ask and you shall receive, you know, ask for help. You know, God mm-hmm. will give you help. He'll send you helpers. But when my father came forward, my father had said, you know, again, how did you find me? I told him, and I said, well, you know, he says, I said, how are you doing? He says, not good. And I said, well, what about the prayers? And he said, what prayers? I said, are you kidding? I said, Mom, and I take, you know, we say prayers for you all the time. He says, I didn't get them. I said, well, ask for them. They're there for you. And he said, he held on to me, and I turned into like a little girl, like 8, 9 years old. And he mm-hmm. said, I can't believe how you'll never know how much you just helped me.
Hmm.
And I said, well, good. And as soon as that happened, I was leaving, and I said, oh, I don't want to leave. And it was like, well, you have to go now. And I was back in my body.
That's an amazing story on so many levels. Really an amazing story. Thank you.
I've encountered this place that's very similar to her.
Really?
To me, it seemed like, oh, yeah. And the thing is that there's buildings and places or locations that I think are constructed to make us feel comfortable. I don't think they're necessarily real or anything like, but it makes us, because we'd be very disoriented if all of a sudden we're snatched out of this situation and placed in a situation that had no up or down and no walls or all that. So I think those are designed to give us some type of reference. I visited this place where it seemed like a halfway station to me. I remember thinking it was like a bus station. Like outside one door, there was the no coming back portion, where whatever was out there, once you left out that, you would not be coming back. And then there was another portion where there were people who she mentioned persecuted, but in my experience, they were traumatized by their life experience. And this was a place where they could recover before moving on. So I had a similar experience and that I never told anybody about. So I think it's really interesting that she described something that was very similar to something that happened to me.
Wow. All right. Way short on time, but let's jump to first-time caller line in Las Vegas, Nevada, over the hill. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Mike. I hate to bring this up, but could you talk about the violence? I'm familiar with the act, and that's why I picked up the projection. But I've
you've got some noise going on there in the background.
Oh, excuse me. I found myself being, in different situations where I've actually had to project myself into a, how do you say it, subjective individual.
You're talking about out-of-body experience and violence?
Yes, yes. If you could address that a little bit.
Okay, and violence has been done to you out-of-body, is that right?
Oh, my goodness. I grew up with it, you know what I mean? Like he was talking about passion. I mean, well, you know, all your friends are like that. That's what you know. The way I grew up.
Yeah, I guess. All right, let's talk about that. Thank you very much. We're short on time, but Dr. Taylor, violence in an OBE.
Okay, well, I have to say negative experiences, because violence is just maybe one part of it. There are negative experiences, even painful experiences, meaning that you feel pain in the experience, but when you come back, you're okay.
Yeah.
It happens. It used to happen in the beginning with me on the lower levels of the astral plane. I mean, I felt pain when I came back. I was surprised there was no physical damage. But it's intense. So there are some negative encounters to be had initially, but as you get better at it, there are places far beyond where those negative encounters would have happened.
You know what, buddy? You've changed your tune a little bit over the years.
Well, I have to say there are some negative experiences.
Well, that's what I mean by you've changed your tune, because years ago you said, no way, there are never, nothing negative ever happens. And if it did, you'd snap back immediately. Hold on, Dr. Taylor. I got to call you on that one. Years ago, it was safe, it was safe, it was safe. Remember? So obviously in the intervening years, you have learned something. I'm Art Bell. This is Midnight.
Changes are coming, no doubt. It's been a too long time with no peace of mind, and I'm ready for the times.
Take a walk on the wild side of midnight. From the Kingdom of Nye, this is Midnight in the Desert with Art Bell. Please call the show at 1-952-225-5278. That's 1-952-CALL-ART.
It is the wild side of midnight. No question about that. My guest is Dr. Albert Taylor. Dr. Taylor designed things for the International Space Station, did that kind of work, worked on the F-117A. Even the Star Wars program, and then turned his attention toward what we're talking about tonight and more, OBEs. Now, I said I was calling the doctor a little bit, and I am. When we first interviewed back in the 90s, I remember it so well, doctor. I was so fascinated with it, and I asked you again and again and again, it's safe, right? Ooh, yes, always safe, never negative stuff, never, 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 never. And when I interviewed the second person, President Bennett, on this subject, I hit him with the same stuff. And you know what? His initial reaction was exactly the same as yours was. Oh, no danger. When I press him really hard, well, yeah, you could run into some negative entities over there.
Yeah, that. Remember, I told you though. I said there's a few things that could happen. Mm. That if you imagine a devil or a demon or something,
yes,
it's gonna manifest, because thoughts are things, and your thoughts create things, and it's gonna be the biggest, reddest demon that you've ever encountered.
Wonderful.
If you imagine that it's attacking you, and you believe that it's inflicting some kind of injury or pain on
yes.
you, you're going to experience that pain.
Oh, great.
But it doesn't mean that something is attacking you necessarily.
Yeah, but doctor, I can imagine a lot of things. I can imagine God, and I don't see how you can imagine God in the good place without imagining the devil in the fire.
Well, it takes practice, first of all, but this is the thing, and I always tell people, if it exists, I'll just tell you, because I'm not trying to sway it either way. Negative,
gotcha.
It's negative.
Yeah.
But now, if it existed on a permanent state or basis, I should encounter it periodically throughout all my experiences.
Yes.
That's how I see it. It's like a wild animal. It may not see me all the time when I go into the forest, but I should encounter it periodically.
Mm.
Well, I only encountered it in the beginning when I was fearful, when I was at the lower aspects of the astral plane and things like that. But after doing it many, many times and then developing a certain amount of confidence, and they cease to happen. So if it happened now, I would say, hey, even though you develop confidence, you could still have these bad experiences, but they haven't. So that leads me to believe that all the fear that I originally had, and the fear of the unknown, because I had a lot of it. I was a chicken, man. I like to call myself an astral chicken. I was scared, but I only had negative experiences when I began initiated the whole thing through a position of fear.
This from a guy who would hold the camera until Bigfoot made soup out of him.
Yeah, now. Initially, it was scary, Art. I didn't, you know, I've watched every ghost movie Hollywood has produced, and I've seen encounters with ghosts, what happens, and it never ends up well. So with that knowledge, going into this unknown experience,
all right.
I scared myself a lot of times.
Okay. Master Lex. What a name on Skype. Hello.
Thank you for taking my call, Art. I actually spoke to you a few weeks back about, I think we were talking about shadow people.
Yes.
And so, yeah, it was. I felt like that at the same time that that was along these same roads, whereas although you can see shadow people when you're awake, I often saw mine when I was sleeping. I would wake up and I would see them. So I'm thinking that maybe they were part of that, I guess, lower astral plane that Dr. Mm-hmm. Taylor was referring to.
Very good. Very good.
And,
never seen a shadow person, but I've seen spirits. But I would imagine because my five senses aren't capable of detecting the non-physical beings that are around in that area. But I would imagine, and we're not all the same, someone who may be turned up a little bit on the dial can sense this kind of thing. So if you turn up your dial to your sensitivity, I'm sure you're going to see images. They may not be clear, and they may seem to be darkened or whatever, or silhouettes, but I'm sure that is definitely possible. If you have an out of body experience, your senses are turned up to maximum, so you literally dial in on the frequency that can perceive whatever is around you.
Yeah, well, I'd like to keep my dial set below S for shadow person. Go ahead, caller.
Sometimes you're born turned on, I call it, you're just able for these things to happen. And I think that's probably one of the more scarier positions is when it's just on and you don't know what's going on.
Right.
And you see these non-physical beings around you. Yeah, that'll be terrifying.
This from a person who hit the jackpot genetically for all this. Yes, go ahead, caller.
Oh, I was going to say as well, I've had an astral, or I guess an out-of-body experience where I remember it extremely vividly, and what stuck out most, some people might find shocking, was that I didn't have a body. I was this little blue orb, this light, in my bedroom. And as I looked around my room, it was like a 360 view. I could see all around me, but I could direct my focus on certain things in the room, and I noticed particularly electronics. They had like this little aura around them, and I could move around my room. And I thought, well, you know, I don't have a body. How do I move something, or how do I touch something?
Maybe as a little blue orb, you were seeing electromagnetic energy.
I think that is possible. And when I thought about trying to touch something, I actually manifested kind of this
an appendage,
blue hand. Yeah, an appendage, right. Exactly.
Right.
So yeah, and that was my and of course. It was very difficult to concentrate, and so I think I eventually slipped back into my regular body or sleep state, whatever it was, but it was very interesting and extremely intense.
It was. I bet little blue orbs don't have much of an astral sex life. Doctor?
He just described it as our natural state. You are not your body, and you're not your astral body either. That's just something you wear when you're in the astral plane. You are something else that... I had in the beginning a lot of times where I would leave the astral body and find myself in just like a spherical existence, and my vision was 360 degrees also. So that's your natural state. Even I used to drag around. I remember describing in my book when I left my body, I moved around the bed, and I was dragging something deflated behind me.
Mm.
And when I looked, it sounds kind of gross. When I looked, it was my astral form. So I was in three parts of me were in three different locations at the same time. My physical body was flat on his back sleeping. My astral body was kind of still clinging on to me, and I was existing as a spherical consciousness with 360 degrees of vision. So, yeah, that's your natural state. Beyond the astral form.
All right. Outside the country with Mario. Hello.
Hey, how are you going, gentlemen?
It's going fine. You're probably in Australia.
That's right. I certainly am. I gave you a call last time about shadow people.
Yes.
Yeah, look, I've got a question for the doctor. I've had an experience where it's almost like you're not in a dream state but beyond it. And I was curious to know, is it a common sort of... how can I explain? Is it common for you to sort of go dropping down through certain levels? So one that feels less murky and one that feels really nice and clear? Because the murky ones, like the dream state, almost feel like you're drunk in a way, because it's it's just fuzzy.
Okay.
Right, yeah. Yeah, there's a range of consciousness, meaning that you can be at a very low level and not perceive very much, not even be aware very much, and then that can be turned up. And there's a range in your environment. Because the astral plane, let me describe this. Imagine you had a beaker, a cylindrical beaker, and you fill that beaker halfway up with dirt, dry dirt. Well, that dirt represents the physical plane. Now you take some water, which the water represents the astral plane, and you pour it into the beaker. Well, as you go, after you fill it up, as you go from the top to the bottom, it's very, very clear where the dirt, the water hasn't come in contact with the dirt. And as you descend into the beaker, it becomes murkier and murkier, and becomes thicker and thicker, and eventually becomes muddy. And then even though it's muddy, as you continue down through the beaker, there's some places where the water hasn't gotten to yet, and it's still dry. That very low, dry level is where we are now on the physical plane. That's where we exist. But as you move up, the astral plane is partly here, and it's partly beyond here. So as you move up in vibrational awareness, you move through those murkier areas of the astral plane to an area where it's very clear, and you no longer can perceive the physical plane.
So you could kind of, in a way, have multiple occasions where you wake up multiple times, which is something I've experienced, where you wake up like four or five times in the same place and you just don't know what reality is. And it's actually really interesting when you get to that stage. But yeah, thank you for that.
All right. Well, a long time ago, one more thing to address that. A long time ago, one of the clues to having an out of body experience is that you may wake up more than once. You wake up into the dream that you thought you were already awake in. So remember, there's a duality of consciousness. There's the physical consciousness, and then there's the super consciousness. So those two things can interact and can feel like you wake up twice. You wake up into the super consciousness, and then as you come out of that, you return and wake up into the physical consciousness.
Okay. All right. Let's go to DeLand, Florida, I guess. Hello.
Hey, Art.
Hello.
Hello, Albert.
Hello.
I called in, Art, back when you had Preston on, and I had thanked you for getting me into this because I had heard Albert on your show.
Isn't it interesting that the similarities with what they say?
Oh, yeah. That's one of the reasons I was trying to call back in to speak to Albert again. I've had a tremendous number of out-of-body experiences, but the guys with the hoods, I didn't know if Albert figured out who they are.
You're talking shadow people.
Well, no, they're like
Reaper
guys.
No?
They're like watchers or something, I don't know. And the other thing, the higher self, when I've kind of requested to experience that, you have this, like, at least I do, I get this, like, a swirling, I have a cold, excuse me.
Sorry?
Get, like, a swirling, euphoric, intense tornado thing going on, and you, I don't know, it just gets so intense that I end up slammed right back in my body, and I never get beyond that, whatever it is. I don't know what to expect beyond that when you hit that swirling euphoria thing, you know, with the higher self.
Remember, it's kind of like you're all of a sudden in, you find yourself in the front seat of a car that's rolling down a hill, and if you don't take control, it's going to do whatever. It's going to bounce off the cars, park cars, and end up wherever the car ends up. So I'm not sure if while you were having this experience, you actually decided you wanted to do something. Generally, if you don't decide and you just kind of observe, anything could happen. That means you could see anything or you could experience anything. I've had a woman who'd never had a near-death out-of-body experience, and at 40 years old, she had her first, and it terrified her only because she found herself bouncing off the walls and everywhere. So, yeah, that happens if you don't take control. But know this, you can take control and direct your, if you can focus your thoughts, you can direct your experience in any direction you want to.
Okay, Thomas Short, Yorkton, Saskatchewan, I think.
Hey, Art. I just wanted to have a quick share something with you guys. I had my first out-of-body experience when I was 12 years old. I was sleeping down in the basement. And my grandma, who was in a nursing home about 30 miles away, and I seen her come to me in spirit form, and I went and left my body spirit form, and she took me with her for a walk, and then I got introduced to some family members, which I never knew at the time, including my deceased aunt that was stillborn many years ago.
Oh my God. Well, how would you know that?
Well, I'm getting to that. This is pretty cool. I had a guy in military fatigue, so I had no idea who it was. So fast forward to the next morning, my dad gets a phone call, found out grandma died. Okay, so and then we went down to her where she was, getting cleaning stuff, going out, and I told my dad that he had a sister that passed away, which was an aunt of mine. He goes, "You're full of it." Fast forward 2 years later, we go to a family reunion. My dad's parents were split up, and my grandpa was telling my dad that he had a sister that died between him and his sister. And he was just looking at me, glaring at me like totally crazy. And the guy in the military fatigues, I later found out, was my grandpa who died in the First World War. One of my great-grandfathers, actually.
Wow.
So, yeah, I wanted to share that with
you. What I described earlier, where people have, and children, have met grandparents or great-grandparents that died long before they were born. That sounds quite common, and I've heard that that people having that experience before.
Maybe quite common, but it's astounding.
It is astounding.
Absolutely astounding.
Yeah.
Very quickly on Skype, we're almost out of time. Robert, are you there?
I am.
Okay, go ahead. Real quick.
Dr. Tyler, one question for you. When you reach the highest astral plane, is it possible you come in contact with something else that is in translucent color, such as yourself? You're a being. You feel like somebody is communicating with you, but yet, I hate to say this, but and I'll say it this way: they're very metallic and almost glistening and flying with you side by side. And feeling the same feelings and thoughts that you have?
Yeah. Well, definitely. That's what I was hinting at earlier, Art, is that you think you're alone, but you're not alone. Now think about this. Imagine the astral plane being from on a dial from 0 to 10. And then imagine there's a higher frequency from 0 to 20.
Mm-hmm.
Well, imagine you only have a vibration, or your dial can only go up to 7. But another being's dial can go all the way up to 17. So they can come from 17 to encounter your realm, but you can't go up to 17 to experience theirs. Mm-hmm. But you can meet when they meet you at the lower levels. And your higher self is definitely with you all the time and will be with you to protect you in the encounters and guide you through the experiences that you have.
All right, my friend. My dial only goes to R now, not to S for shadow people. Doctor, listen, we didn't do it all by a long shot, so I'm going to have you back again.
I would love to come back, Art. I enjoy doing shows with you.
The program just goes like that. It's gone.
Yeah.
Dr. Taylor.
5 hours used to go by so fast. So.
Thank you, my friend, so very much, and we'll do it again and soon, I'm sure.
You have a great evening, Art.
You too. Wow. Totally a wow. Whole subject is just awesome. Thank you all so very much, and we will do this again. In fact, we'll do it again tomorrow night. I've got a priest here tomorrow night. We're going to be talking about exorcisms. It's going to be really something. Until then, from the high desert, good night.